Are you here for the auction?
It was easy to see why Nye was ahead. He handled the cards easily and gracefully, whereas the others around the table looked awkward even picking up the pasteboards.
That depends.
On what?
On how much I win here.
What does that have to do with it?
Well, who knows? I might get enough money to buy a few head of prime stock and get some land just outside of town. Then, I'd start looking for a good woman to have my kids. I'd join the local chamber of commerce and run for mayor. And if that works out, I might take a seat in Congress. And after a few terms, I'll run for president of the United States. They'll build statues of me in Washington and put my picture on money. I can see great things from this one little card game. So you see, gentlemen, I've got to win here tonight. The future of the United States may well depend on it.
Hey, Bill, move over. Your position as the town humorist has just been challenged.
Hey, Susie, did you hear this, gentleman? If he wins big, he's going to be president of the United States.
Susie looked back at Falcon and smiled broadly.
I just heard the part where he'd be looking for a wife. Honey, you're a good-looking man. Maybe I'd better come over there and bring you luck. And if you do all you say you're gonna do, I'd be happy to be your wife.
Don't you be bringing any more luck to this table, Susie, unless you bring it to me.
Falcon won the first hand.
Better watch it, Nye. This fella's on his way.
As the game continued, Falcon won a little more than he was losing, but he wasn't the big winner. Neither was Nye. It was almost as if by joining the game, Falcon had changed the rules to the point that everyone seemed to be winning a bit more. That had the effect of improving everybody's morale. And as their morale improved, they began talking about how much money the auction would generate.
Why, before this auction is over, I bet there'll be more money in this little town than in all of Denver.
Good evening, gentlemen.
There was something familiar about that voice, and turning, Falcon saw Kathleen Coyle.
Why, Miss Coyle, what are you doing here?
I thought we were old friends by now. Surely you can call me Kathleen. And everyone has to be somewhere. Are you displeased to see me?
Oh, no, of course not. It's just I didn't expect it, that's all.
Well, as to what I'm doing here, I'm singing. I'm finally getting to perform. Isn't that wonderful?
Oh, yes, it is. I'm very pleased for you. Where are you performing?
Why, right here in the Gold Strike.
Kathleen pointed to the piano player, who in all the time Falcon had been in the saloon had played not a note.
Jimmy is my accompanist. Jimmy, this is my friend Falcon McAllister.
Hayford spewed beer all over the table.
McAllister? Did you say your name was Falcon McAllister?
Yeah.
Well, I'll be... Boys, I don't know if you know it or not, but Mr. McAllister here is a man of some renown. For example, along with Mickey Free, he cleaned out Naiche and his bunch a few years back. Then, if that wasn't enough, he went back down there and took care of Kitano. Yes, sir, Arizona is safe because of this man. Mr. McAllister, I wonder if I could shake your hand.
Falcon was uncomfortable with all the accolades, but he smiled and shook Hayford's hand, then the hand of everyone he'd been playing cards with, as well as the hands of several others who came over to meet him.
Say, you may have just been teasing about running for Congress before, but I believe I could get you elected.
Well, I doubt that, and I was teasing.
Don't be too sure I couldn't do it. Look what happened to Davy Crockett. He was a hero who wound up in Congress.
Yeah, he also wound up dead.
A minor obstacle.
Falcon looked back toward Kathleen.
When do you sing again?
I'll sing right now if you'd like.
Please do.
The song is called A Cowboy's Wife I'll Be, and it was written by Mr. George Henry Russell.
Kathleen nodded at the piano player, who put his whiskey glass on top of the piano.
I'm a wild and laughing girl, just turned sweet 16, as full of mischief and fun as ever you have seen. And when I am a woman grown, no city beau for me. If ever I marry in this life, a cow. wife I'll be. A cowboy's wife I'll be. A cowboy's wife I'll be. If ever I marry in this life, a cowboy's wife I'll be.
Kathleen danced around the room, stopping first at one table, then another. Sometimes she put her finger under her chin and curtsied. Other times she would throw her hip out and pout.
Let those who like it best enjoy the smoky town, midst dusty walls and dusky walks to ramble up and down. But sunny fields and shady groves have charms enough for me. So if ever I marry in this life, a cowboy's wife I'll be. A cowboy's wife I'll be. A cowboy's wife I'll be. If ever I marry in this life, a cowboy's wife I'll be.
Kathleen walked over to the bar and held up a glass.
Boys, will you all buy a fresh drink and have it with me?
Damn near everyone in the saloon rushed to the bar for a drink or a refill.
She does that after every song. She's been the best thing for Sylvester's business since he opened the Gold Strike.
Do you know her from somewhere?
I met her up in Miles City, Montana a few weeks ago.
And here she is in Laramie, Wyoming. Small world.
Yeah.
Ah, well, gentlemen, since my luck has turned, I think I'll leave the game before I lose it all back.
I have to go as well. I've got some work to do on tomorrow's paper.
The departure of both Nye and Hayford effectively ended the game, so Falcon took his chips over to the bar and cashed them in. He'd won $10, coincidentally the same amount of money he'd paid for his room and board. Kathleen came over and stood beside him.
What'd you think of the song?
Well, I thought you did very well.
I'd hoped you'd like it.
I must say, it was a surprise seeing you here.
I'm not here by chance. I heard you and Mr. Corus talking about what was going to happen here, and I thought it might be interesting to come down and watch. Besides, it gave me another chance to see you. Do you have a place to stay tonight?
Well, yeah, I've taken a room.
I've got a room here in the saloon. It comes with the job. You could always give your room up and come stay with me.
It was a tempting invitation. Falcon didn't like to get too involved with any one woman. Since losing Marie, he was not ready to give too much of himself to any woman now.
I thank you for the invitation. But if I'm going to be bidding on cattle, I need to keep my head clear. I'm afraid you would be too much of a distraction.
I'll accept that as a compliment.
Good, because that's what I intended it to be.
It was 11 p.m. when Falcon let himself into his room. He noticed that the covers were turned down for him and a lantern burned dimly by his bedside. There was a note on the table under the lantern.
Mr. McAllister, I hope you enjoy your stay with us. I will be serving breakfast at 7 of the morning. I will knock lightly on your door. Sincerely, Francis Martin.
Oh, well, women in this town sure are obliging.
The knock on his door the next morning was not made by Mrs. Martin.
Mr. McAllister, it's time for breakfast!
Oh, shit. What?
Falcon opened his eyes and looked around the room. For just a moment, he was disoriented. The room was unlike any hotel room he'd ever been in. Instead of a bare table and a Spartan closet, this room had an ornate dresser and a chest of drawers, a clawfoot table, curtains on the windows, pictures on the wall, and a carpet on the floor.
Mr. McAllister, you wake in there?
Yeah, I'll be out in a few minutes.
Don't be long. Mom gets sore when folks are late for breakfast.
I'll hurry.
For a moment, as Falcon was dressing, he thought back to the days when he was part of a family. getting dressed in the morning, eating around the breakfast table with his parents and siblings. Part of that feeling tugged at his heartstrings now and made him feel pain. But in a strange way, he also took a great deal of comfort from it, and he was looking forward to having breakfast with Gordon and his mother. The pleasant feeling continued as Falcon walked into the dining room. He could smell the fresh coffee, bacon, and biscuits. And when he sat down, he saw that Francis had made gravy.
Oh, my. I can't remember the last time I had a home-cooked breakfast like this. Mrs. Martin, you are a wonder.
My goodness. It's just a breakfast.
Just a breakfast? And I suppose you think the Rocky Mountains are just a few hills.
Gordon, would you please pass Mr. McAllister the biscuits?
Yes, ma'am.
As Falcon picked up a biscuit, he let his hand fly up.
Well, goodness, his biscuit's so light it's about to fly away.
Gratuitous compliments aren't necessary, Mr. McAllister. You may have as many biscuits as you wish.
Well, in that case, I'll just take another while the platter's here within reach.
Mr. McAllister, are you going to take part in the rodeo today?
Rodeo? What rodeo?
Some of the local businessmen arranged it. It's to celebrate the big cattle auction. There's going to be riding contests and roping contests and shooting contests, all sorts of things. There's going to be a foot race, too, and I aim to enter that.
Are you a good runner?
I'm the fastest runner in Albany County.
Gordon, don't brag so.
It ain't bragging if it's true.
It isn't bragging if it's true.
See? Even you think that.
I wish you luck in the race.
Thanks, but I don't need it. I'm going to win.
Gordon, boastfulness is not an admirable trait.
But confidence is, and I admire the young man's confidence.
Back in Denver, Gilly Cardis had just about given up trying to find Falcon McAllister. It was the morning of his third day in Denver, and he had spent the previous 2 days wandering around town, picking people at random to ask where McAllister lived. An amazing number of people knew about McAllister, but no one knew it. And not one person could tell Cardis where Falcon lived.
Paper! Get your morning paper!
A boy was holding up the paper so people could see the headlines. As Cardis walked by, one of the stories caught his eye. Cattle auction in Laramie. Falcon McAllister among those in attendance. Cardis grabbed the paper to look at it.
Hey, mister! That'll be 5 cents.
I just want to see this one story.
It'll cost you 5 cents. Unless you want me to call that policeman over.
Looking up, Cardis noticed that a policeman was standing on the corner. And having overheard the paper boy, he was now looking back right at him.
All right, all right. God damn, here's your damn nickel.
Thanks. Paper! Get your morning paper!
New breed of cattle to be auctioned, to be attended by America's wealthiest cattle barons. Colorado to be represented by McAllister. Upwards of $100,000 to be spent. Said to be end of the Longhorn.
Cardis read no further than the headline and the subheadlines. He didn't need to. The Falcon McAllister was in Laramie, and that was where he was going as well. Cardis handed the paper back to the boy.
All right, I've read it. Now give my nickel back.
Uh-uh. You bought it, mister. That's your paper now.
Give me my nickel back, you little shit. Pound your goddamn head in.
The paper boy took out a coin and dropped it.
You little son of a bitch.
As Cardis bent over to pick it up, the paper boy ran. That was when Cardis saw that the boy had returned a penny, not a nickel.
Oh, horseshit.
The boy was too fast and had too much of a head start for Cardis to be able to do anything. Angrily, he walked to the train depot. It was still early morning, but the depot was as crowded now as it had been when he arrived. He had no idea how many people were milling around, but he believed that this depot alone had as many people as most of the towns he was familiar with. Cardis walked over to the long counter with the frosted glass. He stepped up to one of the windows.
Yes, sir. How may I help you?
How much is a ticket to Laramie?
$4.
When's the next train?
Next train to Laramie is sitting on track 3 at this very moment. If you hurry, you can catch it. It'll put you in Laramie by 8 o'clock this evening.
Give me one ticket.
At the very moment Gilly Cardus was boarding the train in Denver, the entire town of Laramie, Wyoming was turned out for the festivities. Bleachers had been erected around the corral. The riding and roping events had taken up most of the morning. Now people were gathering for the foot race. The runners were loosening up, kicking their legs high, running quick sprints, then coming back to the starting line. There were at least 20 entered in the race, and Gordon was clearly the youngest. Frances was standing behind her son, massaging his neck and shoulders.
Mr. McAllister, are you going to enter the shooting match this afternoon?
I don't know. I haven't thought about it.
I think you should.
Gordon, Mr. McAllister can make up his own mind whether or not he enters.
If I win this race, will you enter?
Well, you don't have to win. It's enough that you're competing.
You're just saying that because you don't think I can win, and you don't want me to feel bad.
Falcon smiled and winked at the boy.
Something like that.
Well, don't worry. I'm gonna win.
How long is this race?
It's to the fork in the river and back.
Now, how far is that?
3 miles to the fork, so the race is 6 miles.
You're gonna run for 6 miles?
Yep.
Gordon?
Yes, sir.
People! All runners for the foot race, come to the starting line now.
I gotta go.
Well, good luck to you.
Gordon sprinted to the starting line. The official starter got all the runners lined up behind him. Falcon looked at the line of runners. Gordon was clearly the youngest and the smallest.
Look at him, so young and so sure of himself. I do hope he does well.
The runners started off. Although Falcon knew that the start of a distance race wasn't as explosive as the start of a sprint, it was just as important, for there was an immediate jockeying for position as the field began setting up. Before they passed the church at the edge of town, there were already frequent changes of leadership among the top 6 runners. As the runners grew smaller in the distance, the field was fairly well strung out. But because Gordon was clearly the shortest of all the runners, he could be identified even at a distance. He was running in the leading third of the pack. But then they were too far away to make out at all.
Oh, I wish we could see him.
Falcon glanced across the street and saw something in the window of the hardware store that made him smile.
Excuse me a minute. I'll be right back.
A few minutes later, Falcon was back. He took Frances by the arm.
Come with me.
Come with you where?
Up here, where we can see Gordon.
Falcon led Frances up a set of stairs that climbed the side of the apothecary. At the top of the stairs was a small porch that was the entrance to the doctor's office. There, Falcon removed his purchase from the sack. It was a pair of binoculars. He looked through them, then handed them to Frances.
Can you see him?
Yes, thank you. Oh, look, Gordon is running very well.
Frances handed the binoculars back to Falcon, who raised them to his eyes to check out the field. By now, the first 3 runners had opened up a significant lead on the rest of the pack. In fact, some of the runners had already stopped running and were walking. As the first 3 reached the fork in the river, they made their turn and started back. Gordon was running number 3, but was hanging very close to the first 2 runners. The 3 leaders passed many of the runners who had not yet made it to the fork in the river. As they came closer, they came back into view. The town could see them.
Oh, Gordon, run, sweetheart, run!
The 3 runners reached the edge of town and were less than 200 yards from the finish. Then, Gordon put on a burst of speed, surprising the 2 runners in front of him. He took the lead just as they passed the church, then began opening up the lead until he crossed the finish line at least 10 yards ahead of the second place runner. The crowd was impressed not only by Gordon's youth, but by his athleticism. Several of the men rushed up to him and lifted him onto their shoulders. The laurel wreath of victory was passed up to him, and he put it on his head. Then he waved to the crowd. Then he saw Falcon and his mother.
I won the race, Mr. McAllister. That means you have to enter the shooting match.
Soon, 3 wagons loaded with bales of hay were maneuvered into position, the drivers of the wagons expertly handling the 2 mule teams that were pulling. The wagons completely blocked off the main road coming into town, and riders were sent at least a mile down the road to prevent anyone from wandering into the line of fire. Each wagon had four targets attached to the hay bales, so that a total of 12 targets were ready for the shooters in the competition. 24 shooters were entered, which meant that there would be two heats, the top six of each heat selected to move on to the next round. Deputy Sheriff Seth Joyner was in charge of the shooting match, and when all was ready, he gave the call.
Shooters, into your stalls!
Falcon was in the first heat, so he picked up his Winchester.
Good luck.
Well, thanks.
The shooting positions were stalls, exactly as the judge had called them. Each stall was separated from the other by a wall of canvas.
Present your weapons for inspection now. Remember, they must be empty.
One of the judges came up to Falcon and held out his hand, asking for the rifle. Falcon put the lever down to open the breech, then presented the weapon to the judge. The judge cycled through a few times, then handed the rifle back to Falcon. He also gave him three 30-caliber bullets.
Shooters, load your weapons. After you receive the order to fire, you will have 1 minute to shoot all three bullets.
Falcon waited.
Commence firing at your discretion.
Targets were only 75 yards away, an incredibly easy shot for Falcon. Falcon was one of the six selected to go on to the next round, and he left the stall carrying his weapon with him. He saw Gordon, but he didn't see Francis.
Well, where's your mom?
Oh, she's around here, somewhere.
Six shooters were chosen from the second round as well, so that once again, 12 shooters moved up to the firing line. The 12 were cut to six for the third round. All six in the third round tied, so the judges moved the wagons back again. This time, only four survived. After another round, only Falcon and one other shooter remained. The other shooter was at the far end of the shooting line, shielded from Falcon's view by the canvas walls. With only two shooters left, Joyner changed the rules slightly. Now, instead of shooting only three rounds, they were given seven rounds to shoot.
Target number one, seven bulls. Target number 12, seven bulls.
The targets were moved, then moved again. They were now 300 yards away.
Commence firing!
After both shooters were finished, someone went out to check the targets. Again, each shooter had scored seven bullseyes.
Folks, it looks like we might be here all night.
Deputy, I have an idea, if the other shooter is agreeable.
Let's hear it.
How about having us fire one at a time? And then you can time how long it takes for us to fire seven shots. Whoever gets the highest score in the least time wins.
Joyner went down to check with the other shooter, then came back to Falcon.
It's acceptable.
Falcon nodded, picked up his rifle, then waited for Joyner.
Now! Five and one-half seconds.
A judge downrange checked his hits. Then a rider galloped back with a report.
Seven bulls in 5 1/2 seconds. Mister, that is some shooting.
Falcon waited for the other shooter now.
Now!
Falcon tried to keep count of the seconds himself and estimated that every round had been fired in about 6 seconds.
6 1/2 seconds!
Falcon and the crowd waited for the rider to return from downrange with the target report. Joyner looked at it and nodded.
Seven bullseyes! Ladies and gentlemen, based on time, we have a winner!
Joyner pointed to Falcon.
I would like to congratulate the man I was shooting against. That was some very good shooting.
Francis Martin stepped out from behind the canvas wall, carrying a Winchester and smiling sweetly.
What makes you think you were shooting against a man?
You? I was shooting against you?
I should have told you about her, but I wanted to see if you were a better shot than my mom.
I'm not a better shot than she is. I just got lucky.
Francis walked over, joining Falcon and her son.
No, you beat me by a full second. That isn't luck, that's skill.
Where'd you learn to shoot like that?
From me father. He was a wonderful shot. He wanted to prove that he could train a woman to shoot as well as a man.
I would say that he proved his point.
Congratulations, Falcon.
Falcon turned and saw Kathleen approaching, smiling prettily at him.
Oh, thank you.
Aren't you going to introduce me to your friend? Don't worry, I'm not jealous.
Jealous? I assure you, miss, you have no reason to be jealous.
Oh, don't get me wrong. It's just that Falcon and I are old friends. We knew each other back in Miles City.
Oh, I see. Well, we had better be getting home. Come along, Gordon.
Oh, Mom, can't I...
Come along.
Yes, ma'am.
Mother and son took their leave.
Oh, dear. I do hope I didn't cause any trouble.
No trouble. She owns a boarding house where I'm staying.
Oh, I see. Well, like I said, I do hope I didn't cause any trouble. But I wanted to tell you the good news.
Oh? What good news?
I'm doing a show tonight.
Then I shall present myself at the Gold Strike to watch your performance.
No, that's what's good about the news. It isn't at the Gold Strike. It's at the Royale Theater. I'm doing a special show for all the cattle buyers who are in town. Then afterward, there will be a party at the Gold Strike. You will come, won't you?
Yeah, of course I'll come.
You won't disappoint me now, because while I'm on stage, I'll be looking for you. And if I don't see you, why, I don't know if I will be able to finish my performance or not.
I'll be there, I promise.
After Kathleen left, Falcon hurried after Francis, but he didn't catch up to her until he reached the house.
Mrs. Martin, why'd you hurry off?
I didn't want to intrude.
You weren't intruding at all.
Well, perhaps not. But I don't like to get into the personal lives of any of me guests. It's not the best thing to do.
Mrs. Martin, Francis, you don't understand. It's not like that.
So you didn't know her in Miles City?
Well, yes, I knew her in Miles City. That's where I met her.
So your relationship there was casual?
Falcon remembered Kathleen coming into his hotel room on the night of the cattleman's ball. As he thought of it, he flushed slightly.
I'm sorry. I had no right to ask such a question. Please forgive me for that.
There's nothing to forgive. Look, the reason Kathleen came over to speak to me is because she's doing a show tonight at the Royale Theater. She's a very good singer. Maybe you'd like to attend the show with me.
No, I'd better not.
I think you'd enjoy it.
Frances pinched the bridge of her nose.
Please, Mr. McAllister. Falcon... Please don't misunderstand. I'm not upset with you, nor am I reading anything into your relationship with Miss Coyle. But it has been a long and busy day for me. I think I had better stay home. Besides, I should start your supper.
They're going to have a party at the Gold Strike after the show, and there'll be food there. You needn't bother tonight.
Are you sure? You've paid for it, you know.
I'm sure. I'll see you at breakfast.
All right.
Francis waited until Falcon was gone. Then she turned to her son and smiled at him.
Well, me champion runner, what can I fix you? What would you like more than anything else?
Fried peach pies.
For dessert? Very well, fried peach pies it will be.
No, not for dessert, for supper.
Fried peach pies? That's all you want?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, all right. You did win your race today, and I did promise to fix whatever you liked.
Mom?
What?
Are you in love with Mr. McAllister?
What? Of course not. Whatever gave you such an idea?
It's just the way you were talking to him. It was like you didn't care much for that pretty woman that came to talk to him, the one he's going to hear sing.
Well, I was just surprised that he had known her before, that's all. I mean, we're a long way from Mayu's city. It seemed like an unusual coincidence.
That sure would be good, though.
What would be good?
It'd be good if you were in love with Mr. McAllister and you got married. Then Falcon McAllister would be my dad.
No, Your father was Loomis Martin. He was a very fine man and a railroad engineer. You should be very proud of him.
I am proud of him. I wish he was here with us right now.
I wish that as well. But just because he isn't with us in person doesn't mean he isn't with us. I expect he's looking out for us right now.
You think he knows I won the race today?
I'm sure he knows, Gordon. I'm sure he knows.
This is Laramie.
Curtis looked through the window as the Laramie station came into view. Although not a huge metropolis as Denver had been, Laramie was considerably larger than most of the towns of his experience. Stepping down from the train, Curtis saw someone standing on the station platform wearing the hat of a railroad official and looking at his watch.
Hey, I'm looking for a man named McAllister. You know where I can find him?
Cody Martin looked at the man who was inquiring about McAllister. There was something about him that made Cody feel uneasy. Too uneasy to tell him that the man he was looking for was staying in his sister-in-law's house. Cody shook his head.
Might find him at the Gold Strike.
The Gold Strike?
Yeah, it's a saloon just up the street. You can't miss it. It's the only one in town.
Thanks.
Curtis followed the station master's directions to the saloon. He was surprised to see that it was practically empty, and the only two people there were stringing bunting around. A big sign on one of the walls read, "Congratulations to Kathleen Coyle, our songbird."
Hold that end up, will you, Clyde?
Curtis stepped up to the bar and slapped his hand down on it.
You got yourself a customer, Sylvester.
I'll be right with you, mister.
The barkeep was standing on a chair, tacking up one end of a red, white, and blue button while Clyde was holding his end to the wall.
I want a beer.
Well, help yourself. Just leave a nickel on the bar.
Curtis went around behind the bar, picked up a mug, and drew a glass of beer. Then he looked to see if either of the men were looking at him. Curtis refilled his mug.
Where's everybody? I never seen a saloon this empty at this time of night.
Why, they're all at the show. Hey, Sylvester, you better put another tack in that. It don't look like it's gonna hold.
This'll hold.
Well, you're the boss. But if it was up to me, I'd put another tack in it.
What show?
Sylvester pointed to the sign.
The show Miss Coyle is giving. Well, this is where she works, but tonight she's down at the Royale, giving a special show for all the cattle buyers.
The cattle buyers? What cattle buyers?
Where you been, mister? You don't know about the big cattle auction we're having?
Oh, yeah. I think I did hear something about that.
Curtis recalled the headlines he had read that brought him to Laramie.
That's what Falcon McAllister come here for, ain't it? To buy cattle?
McAllister? Yeah, I believe it is.
So he's here then, McAllister?
Well, no, he ain't here. Use your eyes. Me and Clyde's the only ones here.
I mean, is he in town?
Oh, yeah, he's in town, all right. In fact, he won a shooting match today. I swear, I never saw anyone who could shoot like that. I mean, he beat Francis Martin. I didn't think anyone could do that.
He killed this Martin fella, did he?
Francis Martin ain't a fella. She's a woman. And no, he didn't kill her. It wasn't anything like that. This was a shooting match, you know, shooting at targets.
You think McAllister will be in here later tonight?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure of it.
You have all been so wonderful tonight, and I have enjoyed singing the songs you have requested. But I'm going to sing this last song for me. It was written by a man named Thomas P. Westendorf. And when you hear it, you will know why it has such meaning for me.
Kathleen looked out into the audience, found Falcon, and held his gaze.
I'll take you home again, Kathleen, across the ocean wild and wide, to where your heart has ever been. Since first you were my bonnie bride. Kathleen. I'll take you to your home, Kathleen. Oh, I will take you back, Kathleen, to where your heart will feel no pain. And when the fields are fresh and green, I'll take you to your home, Kathleen.
Kathleen acknowledged the applause, then as the curtains began to close, she held up her hand to stop it and stepped out onto the front of the stage again.
We are having a celebration over at the Gold Strike, and I invite all of you to come join us.
With a final curtsy, Kathleen retreated back behind the closing curtains as the audience stood and began to file out of the theater. One of the stagehands came out into the audience and found Falcon as he was talking to Coors and some of the other cattlemen.
Mr. McAllister.
Yes?
Miss Coyle's compliments, sir. And she asked if you would wait long enough to escort her over to the Gold Strike.
I think quite an impression on the lady you have made.
Falcon wasn't particularly pleased that Kathleen had asked him to wait for her, but he decided it would be rude to turn her down.
Mr. McAllister? What shall I tell her?
Tell her I'll wait right here for her.
Yes, sir.
Back at the Gold Strike, Gilly Cartus was on his third beer by the time the crowd had started arriving from the theater.
I'm telling you, she's a pure nightingale, that girl is. I ain't never heard no one who could sing as pretty as that.
Oh, yeah, well, she sings in here most every night, so I could have told you before this here concert ever come about how pretty a singer she is.
She ain't just a pretty singer. She's a pretty girl, too, and that's a fact.
Yeah, but it won't do any good for any of us to get any ideas. She has a fancy for McAllister.
Hearing McAllister's name mentioned, Cartus moved closer to him so he could overhear their conversation.
How do you know she has a fancy for him?
Because I was sitting right behind McAllister and Mr. Coors for the whole show. I figured something was up the way she kept looking over toward him while she was singing. Then, soon as the show was over, stagehand come out and asked Mr. McAllister to wait for her. He's over there now.
Are you sure? The theater's empty now, ain't it?
No, not entirely. McAllister's over there, sitting out in the dark, just waiting for her.
Can you imagine someone like Falcon McAllister sitting in the dark like that just because some woman asked him to?
Yeah, well, there's no telling what all a man will do for a pretty woman, even a man like Falcon McAllister.
The gas lamps in the theater had been extinguished, except for the one closest to Falcon. The theater staff left it burning because they knew he was waiting for Kathleen. Falcon pulled his watch from his pocket and checked it. He'd been waiting for half an hour. Cartus had tried the front door of the theater and found that it was unlocked. Now he stepped into the orchestra area. He saw a single light glowing down front near the stage. And he saw the impressively large figure standing near the light. Cartus drew his pistol and aimed carefully. Through the billowing cloud of gun smoke, Cartus saw the man he had shot at clutch his chest and fall.
McAllister! My name's Gilly Cartus, and I got you, you son of a bitch! That's for killing my brother!
I'm McAllister, Cartus. You just shot an innocent man!
No!
Cartus ran from the theater. With his gun drawn, Falcon ran out after him. A couple of people were standing in the front of the theater. They had heard the shot and seen someone come running from the building.
McAllister, what's going on?
Falcon recognized Hayford, the publisher of the town newspaper.
Hayford, get the doc quick. A man just shot one of the stagehands.
He ran to the other side of the track.
Falcon started toward the track on the run. Then he saw someone stumble out of the darkness toward him. It was Deputy Joyner. There was a circle of fire on his coat. The deputy suddenly fell to the ground. Falcon ran over to him and rolled the deputy over. He beat out the ring of fire on his jacket. That was when he realized what had caused the fire in the first place. Deputy Joyner had been shot at point-blank range, and the powder blast from the revolver had set his jacket ablaze.
Joyner, can you hear me?
Falcon put his hand to the young deputy's neck. feeling for a pulse.
There was none.
Deputy Joyner! He's over here!
Falcon ran across the track and saw Cody Martin.
Where's Deputy Joyner?
He's dead. Cody, did you see the man who shot him?
I think I did. At least I saw a man holding a gun running that way.
Cody pointed toward one of the railroad signs. Looking back up the track, he saw that the train had already reached the far end of town.
Cody, you better get back to the depot and get those people out of the way.
Yeah, good idea.
Falcon started in the direction Cody had pointed. It was too dark to see anything, and as he got closer, he listened for any sound or movement. There was none. Whoever he was after was remaining very still. Now the train was so close that its headlight beam began to light up the area, and in the darkness along the track, it picked up the gleam of a spur.
Come toward me with your hands up or I'll shoot. I can see you.
Not as good as I can see you.
Falcon suddenly realized that he was being backlit by the headlamp of the train. Using the gunman's muzzle flash as a target, Falcon returned fire. At the precise moment Falcon fired, the train was coming around a small bend, which brought its light to bear on Falcon's adversary. Falcon saw the gunman suddenly throw up his gun, then fall backward, sliding head first down the railroad embankment. Now he was lying in the light of the train, which was pulling into the station no more than 50 yards behind him. Falcon ran to his would-be assassin, and as he stood over him, he saw bubbles of blood coming from the man's mouth.
Gilly Curtis.
Yeah.
I thought you were in prison.
I didn't like it all that much, so I come here.
You'd have been better off if you'd stayed.
Yeah. Looks like it, don't it? Who was that I just shot back there?
You shot the deputy.
No, I mean in the theater. Who was that I shot in the theater?
You shot a stagehand.
Damn. I thought I was shooting you. Ain't that a hell of a note? I'm dying, ain't I?
Yeah.
There'd been several people on the depot platform awaiting the arrival of the train. And though Cody had managed to get him out of the way temporarily, they'd seen Falcon's adversary go down in the light of the train. Now they surged down the track to be first-hand witnesses to the drama that was playing out before them. Some of them gathered around the body of Curtis, while others gathered around Deputy Joyner. Falcon was surprised to see that not only were many of the train passengers among the morbidly curious, but so was the train crew.
Make way here.
Falcon looked around to see Sheriff Rodney Gibson coming, parting the crowd before him like Moses parted the sea.
What happened here? What's all up?
The sheriff saw his young deputy lying on the ground in front of him. He knelt beside him.
Oh, damn.
He's dead, Sheriff.
Who shot him?
That other fella, yonder on the ground.
Is that fella dead?
Yeah.
He who shot him?
Mm-hmm.
You know who he is?
Yeah, I know. His name's Gilly Curtis.
Gilly Curtis? I've never heard of him.
He escaped from Yuma Territorial Prison.
Yuma? In Arizona? What's he doing way up here in Laramie?
He came here to kill me.
I see. He came to Laramie to kill you. Instead, he kills two of our people.
I'm sorry.
Well, don't be. It wasn't your fault. At least you killed the son of a bitch. Cody?
Yes, sir?
Get these people on this train out of here. I'll get Nunley to come over to pick up the bodies.
Yes, sir.
Come on, people. You heard the sheriff. Cephas, get your train loaded and get it out of here.
Right, sir. Hold a bud!
The crowd moved back up to the depot, leaving only Sheriff Gibson and Falcon behind. Both men were standing over Joyner's body.
I'm going to have to tell his folks. That ain't something I'm looking forward to.
If someone had wagered that the triple killing that evening would put a damper on the party at the Gold Strike, they would have lost the wager. If anything, the excitement of the shooting added to the excitement of the party.
Gentlemen! Gents! I'd like us to have a moment of silence tonight for the good fallen men Paul Mobley and Deputy Seth Joyner. And three cheers for the man who brought the killer down!
Hip hip!
Hip hip!
Hip hip!
Hooray!
Hip hip!
Hooray!
Toasts were drunk, and several people came over to offer to buy Falcon a drink. He wasn't all that enthused about having people celebrating the fact that he had shot and killed someone, but he took the accolades as gracefully as he could. Falcon looked toward the sound of the girl's cry and saw that a big man had just slapped Susie, the bar girl.
You bitch. You've been watering my drink, haven't you?
I don't water the drinks. I don't even pour them. All I do is drink with the customers.
Don't you lie to me, bitch.
She's telling the truth, Carney.
You stay out of this, unless you want some of the same.
Hey, you leave those women alone.
Falcon stalked toward the commotion. The belligerent customer was a big man, with broad shoulders and powerful arms. He turned to look toward Falcon.
I've heard of you. You're the one they call Falcon McAllister, ain't you?
I'm McAllister.
Well, Mr. McAllister, what are you butting into this for? Is this here whore your girlfriend or something?
Kathleen took Susie away from the big man and put her arms around the girl to comfort her. Falcon saw that Susie was safe, and he turned to the bartender.
Sylvester, I don't mean to be throwing out your customers, but I intend to throw this man out. I think it would be best for everyone if he left.
You'll get no argument from me.
Oh, so you are going to throw me out, are you? And how are you going to do that? Are you going to shoot me like you did that feller tonight? Is that how you fight? By shooting people you don't agree with?
Hold on there, mister. Where do you get off saying something like that? Practically the whole town seen what happened. McAllister didn't have any choice. Besides, the man he killed had already killed two of our own.
I'm just saying that Falcon McAllister is a big man as long as he's got a gun in his hand. I wonder how big a man he would be without it.
My pa told me a long time ago that I was as big as I needed to be.
The big man smiled, showing uneven, tobacco-stained teeth.
So, you think you're big enough to fight me?
If that's what it takes. But I'd rather we handle this peacefully by you just walking out of here.
The big man turned as if he were leaving. Then suddenly, he whirled back around and threw a surprise roundhouse right at Falcon. Sensing it coming, Falcon ducked, then countered with a left jab to the big man's nose. The nose went flat and almost immediately began to swell. A trickle of blood started down Carney's lips.
You want to stop this now?
I'm gonna knock your block off!
The big man swung another roundhouse right, missing with this one as well. Falcon caught him with a right hook to the chin. The hook rocked the big man back, but it didn't knock him down. There was fight in him yet. Carney threw a right jab that caught Falcon squarely in the eye. Falcon's knees buckled, and he staggered back a few steps, but he didn't go down. The big man moved in for the kill, but that was where he made his big mistake. A roundhouse right that he intended to finish Falcon with missed, and that left the big man wide open. Falcon threw a hard left jab to the big man's stomach. Carney doubled over with his hands clasped over his belt. Sylvester poured a glass of beer on Carney's head. The big man awkwardly climbed to his feet. Unsteadily, he lifted his hands again. Falcon made fists of his hands and got set to throw another punch, but the big man lowered his hands and just stared at Falcon.
Is it over?
Carney nodded and held his hand palm up.
Yeah, it's over.
Carney bent over and put his hands on his knees, then stood there for a long time.
You know what I think, Carney? I think you should leave now.
Okay.
The big man started toward the door.
Wait.
The big man stopped.
Don't bother to come back.
With water and whiskey and ugly-ass women, who'd want to come back to this place anyway?
Kathleen stepped up to Falcon.
How's Susie?
She's fine.
Kathleen put her finger on Falcon's eye, which was already swelling from the one good blow the big man had landed.
In fact, she probably won't have as much of a bruise as you're going to have. I was so frightened for you.
Nothing to be frightened about. The worst that could have happened would have been a beating. I've had a few of those in my life.
Not very many, I bet. I mean, if you could handle Carney the way you did, it seems to me like you could handle just about anyone. He's a very big man.
Carney? Is that his name? You know him?
Not really, but he's been in here a couple of times and I've heard his name.
Really? He's been in here? Huh. Don't remember ever seeing him. But if tonight is any indication, he's not the kind of man I'd care to remember anyway.
As far as I know, he's never gotten rough with any of the girls before.
I wonder what got him so riled up tonight.
Oh, people like Carney don't need an excuse to be riled up. He's just a big bully. I was glad to see him get his comeuppance.
I don't mind saying that I could have done without the exercise.
Again, Kathleen put her hand on Falcon's eye.
Oh, that looks like it hurts.
It does hurt.
Kathleen put her mouth close to Falcon's ear.
Falcon, I have a room upstairs with a double bed. Why don't you come up for a while? I could tend to your eye.
Well, thanks, but my eye will be all right.
Do I have to draw you a picture, Mr. McAllister? I don't intend that we use the double bed just for me to look after your eye.
Now, how would it look for you to run out on your own party like that?
Kathleen looked taken aback that her offer to share her bed was rejected. Then she nodded.
Yes, I suppose you're right. But remember, the offer is always open.
I'll keep that in mind. I'd be a fool not to.
Falcon's response soothed Kathleen's hurt feelings, and she leaned over and kissed him on the cheek.
Hey, Kathleen, how about a song?
Yeah, let's hear a song!
Oh, don't you boys get enough? I've already sung for 2 hours tonight.
One more song! One more song! One more song!
Come on, Kathleen! This is your party, after all! You better give them what they're asking for!
All right, boys, all right. But if I wake up without a voice tomorrow, it'll be your fault.
Kathleen stepped over to the piano and began looking through some music sheets. Falcon used the distraction to slip out the saloon. He walked through the town until he reached the Martin House. Falcon started to go around to the back entrance that led to his private room, but the front door opened and Francis stepped out onto the front porch.
Mr. McAllister, I'm still up. You can come in this way if you'd like.
Oh, thanks.
Francis moved back to let Falcon in, then frowned as she saw his eye.
Oh, me word! What happened to your eye?
Francis' fingers felt cool to the heated swelling around his eye.
Well, I sort of ran into somebody's fist.
I hope the other fella looks worse.
I don't know how he could. I haven't seen myself in a mirror yet, but I have a feeling this looks pretty bad.
Come on into the parlor and sit down. Let me see if I can do something about your eye.
Don't worry about it. I'll be all right.
Nonsense. I've seen wounds like this before. It'll swell shut if you don't let me take care of it.
Falcon sat down in the parlor as Frances disappeared. She returned a moment later with a piece of raw red steak.
What are you doing?
There's nothing better than a piece of steak to keep the swelling down.
Yeah, I guess I've heard that, but Francis, I can't let you waste a good steak like that. Not with the cost of meat.
It's not actually a waste. This was supposed to be your dinner, but you didn't eat here tonight.
Francis laid the steak over Falcon's eye.
No, I didn't. But I should have. It would have saved a lot of trouble.
You mean like the shooting in the theater and down by the depot?
You've heard about that already.
Cody told me. He said he saw the whole thing. Or at least he saw the part that happened at the depot.
Yeah, Cody was there. I'm sorry that it happened at the depot, especially as the train was coming in. I'm lucky that it wasn't worse than it was.
From what Cody tells me, you didn't have any choice.
Well, that's true, but I...
But what?
I never seem to have any choice when something like this happens. But I must be responsible because it happens so often. The average person doesn't suddenly find himself in a deadly shootout. What's so funny?
Falcon McAllister, what in the world ever gave you the idea that you are an average person? I've never met anyone who was less average than you.
I guess you've got me there. But then you can hardly call yourself an average person either. Any woman who can shoot as well as you do.
Well then, I suppose we are just two extraordinary people, aren't we? Let me see how your steak is doing.
Francis leaned over Falcon to remove the piece of steak from his eye. He was exceptionally aware of the nearness of her lithe form, curved in all the right places, her shining hair, her large, wide-set eyes, and her high cheekbones. He could also smell a hint of lilac.
Where's Gordon?
He's spending the night with his cousin.
Francis gradually closed the distance between them. Falcon felt her lips on his, and though he had resisted Kathleen's earlier advance, he did nothing to discourage Francis. Johnny Purvis was surprised not only by the arrival of his brother Carney, but also by the condition he was in.
Oh, God damn, Carney, you look half beat to death. What happened?
It don't matter what happened. I went into town like you said, and you're right. There's a lot of money in that town. I wouldn't be surprised if there wasn't more money in the bank there right now than in just about every other town in the West put together.
Well, I told you so. I've had someone on the inside from the first day.
Yeah, I have to hand it to you, Johnny. You had this all planned out from the beginning. You always was smarter than me.
Yeah, it's not very hard to be smarter than you.
Oh, now, Johnny, you got no call to say something like that, us being brothers and all.
We're half-brothers. We got the same ma, and that's all. Thank God we don't have the same pa.
Well, I still don't give you no call to be calling me dumb all the time.
I thought I told you just to go into town and see if all the cattlemen had arrived yet.
That's what I done.
And I thought I told you not to call attention to yourself.
Well, I didn't plan on calling attention to myself.
Carney! What in the hell did you expect when you got in a fight? Hell, as big as you are, you call attention to yourself just by being there. But to start a fight and lose it.
How do you know I lost?
Come on, this is me you're talking to, remember? If you come slinking in here looking like you look now, that means you lost a goddamn fight. Now, who did you lose the fight to?
Falcon McAllister.
Falcon McAllister? Are you crazy? What would make you pick a fight with Falcon McAllister? Especially now, when we're trying to get this job set up.
Didn't you say he was the one that got you took to jail up in Miles City?
So what if I did? That is none of your business.
Yeah, well, he had just killed somebody. And everyone was congratulating him and making over him like he was some kind of hero or something. And I got to thinking about the run-in you had with him up in Miles City, so I figured I'd teach him a lesson.
Oh, hell yeah. It looks like you really taught him a lesson, all right.